Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at all the latest in technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. It's very much your programme this, so if you want to get in contact with us, you're more than welcome to drop us an email or a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be starting our series of conversations with Sony, hearing all about how they make their products and apps and packaging accessible. We'll be hearing about a new website that champions audio description, as well as the work that RNIB have been doing to make sure that video streaming services are offering more content with audio description. So a nice little focus on that this week. Joining me, as always, are Hubert Pavelkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Let's see what's catching everyone's attention. Hubert, we'll start with you.
For me, I'm investigating a soundbar for my TV at the moment. I've been looking at kind of two options from Sonos, who we've mentioned. I've never had Sonos speakers before, so I'm trying to get one, and I've been looking at mixture of either the Sonos Ray or the Sonos Beam Gen 2, and reading up about them, and also just kind of learning about the Sonos ecosystem to kind of understand how they work and operate. So that's been kind of my research task for this week.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you've had Sonos stuff before. That is, believe me, it's a real rabbit hole.
It
once
is.
You get into Sonos gear.
Well, I started reading about the amount of times of speakers they've gone. I'm like, that's a lot of things there.
Oh, but it's when you get into, like, yeah, you get the soundbar and that's good, but it's then when you get curious and you start looking at speakers that can work in surround sound with it and the sub and all this kind of thing, and before you know it, you're spending a fortune. You've got a great sounding like setup. Like ours, in our new house now, because we've been there for about 7 months now, which is scary, but now that we've got a lot more space, we've been able to have like the sound bar and then we've got a couple of speakers in front and then a couple of speakers behind as well, sort of behind us where the couch is. And for certain films, it's brilliant. It's actually kind of scary. Like when you get something that just happens from behind you, it's like, what's going on there? The F1 movie. I don't know if anyone's watched that, but the F1 movie is a great test for your sound system. That's brilliant, is that?
It is, as you say. It's a very addictive ecosystem. We have the Beam first gen. We've had it coming up for 6 years this year. And we also have a pair of Play Ones. They've got this rather silly name for some of their speakers, I have to say. They're rather confusing. So we have a pair of Play Ones attached to that in the living room. And then we've got a pair of Sonos Ones. Trust me, these are what they call their speakers. We've got a pair of Sonos Ones in our bedroom. And these are the ones that have the A-Lady service built in, so we can listen to the news at night when we go to bed, and or, you know, we can listen to radio or whatever we want, really. And then in my office, I have a pair of Play 5s. And I've also got a couple of the Moves and the Roams as well. I love the little Roam speakers because you can take them around the house with you. If you're listening to something, you can group the speakers. There's so many things that you can do with them. But for a while, the app went down the tubes because they revamped it completely. You've probably heard us talking about this on the program. But now they've sorted it all out. You know, people complained. Even people who could see to use the app complained that it just wasn't working properly. So now they've changed it, and it does it for the 99% of the time. It's good, and they are committed to their accessibility cause. So they are really good sounding speakers. They are on the expensive side though, so. I hope you enjoy your Sonos journey, Hubert.
So it would take me a while to, I think, get my head around it. But I think starting with a soundbar is a good point. And whether I'll need anything more, I don't know, because I don't really watch many films. So I don't know if I'll need a whole sound system, but we'll start somewhere.
I mean, to be fair, probably not. Like, the soundbar on its own is good. Me and Jess, I guess me more than Jess, but when watching films and stuff, we're both a bit obsessed with having good sound. So, yeah, we just ended up getting a little bit carried away, really. The cool thing with the Roam, especially though, I will move on from this, but I love Sonos stuff, but the cool thing with the Roam as well, which I like, is that you can group it with your soundbar. So, like, I've had it before where we've been watching the F1 or we've been watching a football match or something like that, and you need to, I don't know, it sounds ridiculous, but sometimes these things can get pretty, you know, you can end up pretty glued to it. And in my case, if I need to go somewhere else and do something, obviously I don't need the screen, so I can just group the Roam or one of the other speakers in the other rooms to the soundbar. I've still got the audio. It's great.
That I do quite like.
Yeah, and it means that, you know, if you're making a meal in the kitchen and you're listening to something, you know, for us, because we don't need the screen of a TV, you can group. I have a Move in the kitchen, a Sonos Move, and it means I can group that with the soundbar, the TV in the living room, and you just get it wherever you want to be, really. And I just love that whole idea going on. It's changed the way I think people, you know, because I do still have a proper hi-fi system because I love music more than TV or films. Even I do love music, and I like streaming music, and I like listening to my own music. So I do still have a hi-fi system with hi-fi separates that I've always had, but I do really like the convenience of the Sonos system as well, because you can, as you say, move around the house, especially when tennis is on in the summer, like Wimbledon. I love listening to it, and I love having it on in the kitchen, in the living room, and in my office. So I just group them, and it's brilliant.
I will just add, by the way, we are not sponsored by Sonos, I promise. It's just good stuff.
We just like them.
Yeah. Natalie, I'll come to you next.
Yeah, I haven't got very much, I don't think, this week, other than bookmarks. So I've been struggling for a while with JAWS on my personal laptop, announcing bookmark start and bookmark end before and after every heading in a document. And it was driving me absolutely scatty. And I couldn't work out why it was happening on my personal laptop but not my work laptop. And they had the same version of JAWS. I couldn't work it out why it was happening with some documents and not others. And it was just all a complete mess. What I discovered was two things. One, my personal laptop, for reasons best known to either Windows or Freedom Scientific, the JAWS setting specific to Word had bookmark announcements on. Now, if you want to turn these off, this is an area of JAWS I've sort of known-ish about, but not really ever investigated, is you do JAWS key plus space, and then V, so V for vector, to open quick settings. Don't ask me why it's a V. And whatever program you're in, if it's Word or Outlook or Excel or the internet, it will give you settings specific to that program. So in this case, I was able to arrow down and find bookmarks. And you use a space bar to toggle between on, off, and another setting I can't remember. And unless you change it otherwise, it will then apply to everything in that program. So like, say, I did it in Word, so any Word documents I open from now on won't have that problem. But the reason why it didn't work the first time round when I looked previously was because I had two versions of JAWS installed on my laptop. Somewhere along the line, I've installed an update, and instead of overriding the current version, it's been added to it. So I had JAWS 25 and JAWS 26. So I had to go and uninstall JAWS 25 before I could then check my settings and see that bookmarks was on and turn it off. So, yeah, two things there. Quick settings is JAWS key plus space and then V for Victor. And if the settings aren't matching what you expect, check if you have more than one version of JAWS installed and maybe uninstall one of the versions or the older version.
Do you know what? I've had this only in certain documents with the bookmark announcements, and I always thought it was a Word thing. Like there were bookmarks put in somewhere, but I could never sort of get to them.
Yeah, but what it is when you put in a heading, you might not trigger a bookmark thing, that might not be a problem. But it's if that heading is then used to create a table of contents, then Windows creates these bookmarks. And it's not normally a problem unless, like I say, you have JAWS bookmark settings on, in which case, like I say, it just becomes overly verbose and really distracting.
For instance, a good example of that is if you've got a user manual, say you've got a Braille device or a device and you've got a user manual, there very often is a table of contents in there and it's link this, link that, but also you get this bookmark link before it tells you what the actual link is for. So, that is really good and I must go and do that after this.
Yeah, I will have a look at that because on most of my work documents that happens.
I don't know how you'd cope. I've been on a mission for months to try to figure out what's causing
Yeah.
it.
Like I said, I didn't even th I don't know why. I didn't even think of JAWS settings. I've just been poking around in Word and spending most of my time getting stuck in that ribbon menu.
Oh,
And
yeah.
yeah, I know JAWS has the virtual ribbons thing. That's amazing, but I still find myself getting lost in it.
I use that. A lot of people don't like those virtual ribbons, but I do actually. I turn them on always.
No, I like the virtual ribbon. I use it, but I think just the way it's laid, like the way the settings are laid out and the options are laid out in different ones, and then you've got
Yeah.
kind of sub-menus within sub-menus within sub-menus, and it just,
Yeah.
I don't like it. But having said that, going to NVDA, and I'm sure there's an add-on for this, but going to NVDA and using the standard ribbon rather than the virtual one, oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, agreed.
So there you go, yeah. A good tip for for JAWS users there if you're getting that verbose bookmark thing. Jackie, what about you? What have you got?
On the similar theme to Natalie, actually, there is now a new JAWS update for JAWS users. I can't remember the actual number of it, but it's JAWS 26, point stupid, whatever the number is. But that has just dropped. I don't really know what's new in it, but it's worth telling people that it's out there. And also, Brian Hartchen's Leesy program, over the last couple of weeks, he has released version 11. So if you are a Leesy user, you can update to version 11, and it's quite reasonable. I think it's about £35. And if for those who don't know what Leesy is, Leasey, it's a program that Brian over the years has developed dramatically, and it works in tandem with your JAWS. So it's tied to your JAWS serial number, and if you want to buy it, you can go to Brian Hartchen's consultancy website, and you can either upgrade it if you have an older version, or you can buy the new version if you're a new user. But it has lots and lots of different features that Brian has worked on over the years. You can have there's a really good podcatcher, so it's called Leesy Cast. There is Leesy Notes, Leesy Bytes. There are games. There are lots of things in it that make life a lot easier when you're using it in conjunction with JAWS. So it isn't essential that you have it, but if you do use a lot of Microsoft applications and you do a lot of copying, pasting, marking text, all that sort of stuff, there is a lot to Leesy, and it works very well with JAWS in tandem with that. So JAWS has dropped a new version, and Brian Hartchen's Leesy is now on version 11.
Yeah, Leesy is great. I love it. And something quite cool that's coming actually, which I saw only today at the time of recording, so not a huge amount on this yet, and no one's tried it yet, unless I guess if you're a beta tester. But like Jackie said there's loads and loads of features in it, and more being added all the time. And one of the things that he's added now is Quick Steps, which as far as I understand it is kind of like a chatbot, like your traditional AI chatbot, focused solely on the Leesy documentation. Like one of the features they've got, which I use all the time, is Leesy Cuts, which is basically just shortcuts to either a file or a folder or a web page. You create these shortcuts and then you press a command, you just get a list of all these different shortcuts that you've set up. You press enter and it opens up. It's literally as simple as that. But if you've got a question of like, you could put in, how do I create a new Leesy cut to this website? And it will just come back and give you the instructions, which, you know, stuff like that he's always working on. Just all these little tweaks to make your computer easy to use, but also just to make the program easier to use as well. Because, I mean, I've got it and I love it, but I don't remember half the commands or half the features that it's got. Well, this isn't so much news because I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but we spoke the other week about some of the new apps that are coming to the Meta glasses. So Aira and Orion were the first couple of apps to be announced, as well as the tighter integrations with Be My Eyes that we've spoke about. One of the other ones that's come in is Scribe Me, which we covered. I think you did a demo of that, didn't you, Hubert? The one that's got...
Yeah, I did indeed.
With the Live Assist. That's coming to the Meta glasses as well in beta form. If you go to the Scribe Me website, which I think is scribeme-ai.com, you can sign up for the beta waiting list there. I've asked them for access. I've signed up straight away to try and get some more information on this and hopefully get a demo of it. And from what I'm hearing, a lot of people are very impressed by this because it is, I don't know how it's doing it, but it is like real-time live AI is this Live Assist. So like as Hubert showed a few weeks ago, you can basically say to it, you know, look for this or tell me when you see this, and it will do a continuous scan. You don't have to prompt it like you do with a lot of these AI services. And that on the glasses is going down really well from what I've been hearing across the different Facebook groups and things.
That's going to be a game changer.
Yeah.
That's what's sort of been a big reservation of a lot of people is, it's all very well saying take a photo of this, but you need to know when the thing is that's it's appearing. You know, it's I saw a demo once where somebody was looking for a taxi and they have to keep saying, is that car taxi? Is that car taxi? Does it have its light on? Does it have its light on? You know, and it was just like, that's not helpful. But if you can say to it, ping me or let me know when a taxi goes by with its lights on, then I can see that being a huge incentive for a lot of people to want to buy it. That sounds massive.
Yeah, I mean, Meta have their own Live Assist, or is it Live? I think it's Live AI that they call it. But we don't have this over here. It's in the US, but we don't have this in the UK, and I don't think there's any news of it coming to the UK anytime soon. So I don't know how that works, but as far as I know, and I could be wrong, but I don't think that is continuous. I think you've still got to prompt it for what you're after. Whereas I tried it with mine just on the phone. I tried it saying, tell me when my computer has booted up and is asking for the PIN. And it just looked for that. It ignored everything around me. It was still quite chatty. I think every maybe 5 seconds, it was saying, because it said, I currently see the Windows logo screen. And every few seconds it kept saying, I still don't see the PIN code screen. I still don't see the PIN code screen. I still don't feel. And it's kind of reassuring that it's you know, it's still going. I think there are times though where I'd prefer it to just stay quiet and just shout out when it sees what I'm after.
That is being worked on. According to what the developer posted, this issue, they are aware of this and they are trying to do something to sort of reduce the frequency of this or do something to make it a little bit less of a problem.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. But
Or reduce the regularity of it, the frequency of it. If it's once every 20 seconds as opposed to once every five.
Yeah, and we don't know what form this takes or like how it works on the glasses yet. I'm only going by what I've heard from posts with people so far, but I can't wait to try this out. So stay tuned. If I do get onto that, I will definitely be talking more about it and hopefully giving a demo as well, but we'll see. Well, another busy week for us. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. We've spoken to Sony a few times here on RNIB Tech Talk and across Connect Radio as well. They've been doing some fantastic work on the accessibility of their products and their services and their packaging and all that good stuff. And joining me now is Mike Somerset, who is the Personal Entertainment Product Manager at Sony Europe. Mike, great to hear from Sony again. Welcome to Tech Talk.
Thank you, Callum. Thank you very much for having me.
So I guess one of the latest products you've got in your headphones range is the WH-1000XM6. Do you want to tell us a bit about those?
That's right. So yeah, the WH-1000XM6, yeah, it is our flagship headband headset. So actually for the last 10 years now, so it was in 2016, we launched the first 1000X headphones, and they've always been really at the top of our range. And the nice thing about these headphones is they focus on sound quality and noise cancelling as the kind of main flagship things to talk about. But then they've got this huge host of other features that go along with them as well. So they kind of sit like at the top of our headband range. So obviously they're a bit more expensive, but they're really the ones that I see around a lot. It's really exciting. If I'm on the tube or something like that, I notice that people have got them, and it's really great because they're very nice headphones, very, very comfortable to wear. And like I say, excellent sound quality, noise cancelling and ambient sound control. So yeah, that's the real focus of them.
And it's interesting you mentioned the ambient option as well, along with the noise cancelling, because that, I think, for blind people in particular, I mean, for me, I find noise cancelling is great, but then there are times where it just feels a little bit strange, I think. Like it kind of blocks off, you know, when you can't see, and then your hearing's blocked off as well. Sometimes it's amazing if you want to kind of just immerse yourself in the music or whatever you're listening to, but I love having that ambient sound as well, just from an accessibility perspective.
No, absolutely. I know where you're coming from. And the thing about the ambient sound and the noise cancelling, they very are much, you know, different sides of the same coin. You know, there are certainly times when you just want to isolate yourself. And the new headphones have actually got 12 microphones. So that's obviously six on each ear cup to capture the sound around you and to capture the sound inside the earbuds as well, and essentially invert the waveform and play it back to you, which cancels out the sound. And it's really great if you want to listen to that super detailed classical music, for example, that really quiet to very loud dynamic range, and it's just beautiful. But of course, like you say, I think it's very important, the ambient sound. And there are times when it's just outright dangerous to have noise cancelling on. So what we try and do is make it as quick and easy to switch between the two for when the situation demands it. So it's just a simple button push and you'll jump from one to the other. But now, as the technology has gotten better over the years, we're at the point with the XM6 when, again, it uses all of these microphones on the headset to pick up the noise that's around you and play it back to you as naturally as it can. And the reason why that is important, of course, is I've actually, because I've been working for Sony for quite a while, I've got the original 1000X headphones and they had ambient sound. But if I listen to it now, it's quite a big difference to not having your headphones on. It still blocks a lot of the sound out, and a lot of the sound that does come in, is it sounds a bit different. So the nice thing about these new headphones is, with the extra technology, with the extra processing and with these extra microphones, the sound you hear when ambient sound switched on is very, very clear, to the point when you can almost hear as well with the headphones on, with ambient sound switched on, and of course with your music not playing, as you can hear with without wearing the headphones at all. It's really got to that stage. So yeah, I think, and that's really important for the clarity for everyone, of course, to be able to have the ambient sound. But yes, certainly a nice advantage for people with low vision as well.
Do you want to tell us about some of the accessibility features on the headphones themselves as well? And there's some physical accessibility on the product itself, and then possibly some of the features as well.
Okay, so with the WH-1000X Mark VI, one of the nice things about it is you can tell which way to put them on just by feel. And there's a few different ways that we've done that. So firstly, there is a left, on the left ear cup, there's a small raised dot, which you can feel. And of course, it's signifying which way around the headphones should go. And it's very important you put the headphones the right way around, because if they're the wrong way around, you're going to have the microphones pointing in the wrong direction, for example. They won't feel quite as comfortable. So it's a really important way to do it. But another nice way is actually on the headband itself. It's no longer a single sort of straight line. It's actually asymmetrical in the sense that there's a slightly different feel to the front and to the back of the headband. So straight away, taking out and just feeling the headset before you put it on, it's quite easy to identify which is the front and which is the back. And that's a new sort of change to the design since the previous model to make sure it's nice and easy to do. Now, also in terms of accessibility, there was a big focus on the case. So the headphones come in a protective carrying case, which you really should ideally keep your headphones in. Certainly if you're going traveling or you're you know, moving around with it, you want to keep them protected. Now, previous models had things like a zip lock that went around them or different systems like that. What we now use is a magnetic enclosure, and it means that it's incredibly easy to take. You can easily feel where the opening is just by picking up the case. Very, very easy to open it and to take the headphones out as well. So that also, actually, just to go back also to when you first get it, the packaging itself for the product is very, very easy to access now, very easy to open, remove the product nice and easily without having to undo lots of different bits to get to the actual product itself. So yeah, there's a number of different sort of things that make accessibility easier when you use the headphones as well. One of them is we want to make it you able to control as many of the features directly from the headphones as possible. So of course, like I mentioned at the beginning, headphones like this come with lots and lots of different features. I mean, so many, I couldn't really go through them all right now. And we want to make the most important ones, the most useful ones, accessible without having to use the support app. So we have this app called Sound Connect, which I can explain more later. But Sound Connect is how you get to the different features of the headphones, and you can tweak the settings and things like that. But also, a lot of them can be done by touch. So for example, you can stop, start music directly from tapping the headphones, of course. You can answer and end phone calls when they come through, and you can just talk to people directly on the headset. You can access your AI assistant directly from the headset just by holding a finger onto the onto one of the ear cups. You can even control some of the functions with just your voice. So there is a function you can say, "Hey headphones." It's our Sony version, and control basic functionality, like you control the volume or you control start and stop. So there's many different ways you can do it without having to get out your phone. And I think that's, for me, that's what, from what I've seen over the last few years when we've been adding more and more features to the headphones, that's one of the biggest leaps forward in terms of accessibility control. You know, anyone wearing those headphones has the ability to do all these features without accessing the app.
And there's a couple of things that I, like you mentioned the case. One thing that I loved, and we should just say as well, because we do like to be transparent about these things, you guys did very kindly send me a set of these and the link buds open to try out. And one of the things that I've really liked about the case in particular is that there's like a mold for the headphones that you can feel.
Yeah.
And I found that really helps to kind of orientate the headphones and get them in the case in the right position. Was that part of it as well?
Very much so. And actually what you'll see on that mold is you'll notice that if you run your finger around the mold, you can feel the indent saying L and R. So there is a specific headphone part of the mold for the headphone for the left and for the right. So it tells you which way around they go. Yeah, all of this was a big focus on creating these products. Even inside that case, there is a slightly easier to access little pouch to put the additional cables in and things like that. Again, that was something that was considered, and how can we make sure that it's easy enough to access, but still being nice and secure as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And again, something else that I've noticed, you mentioned all the voice prompts, even simple things like the battery level. You know, 99% of the time on a lot of products, that's done with little LEDs, you know, little lights. Whereas this, it, again, like you said, the voice assistant, you can get that. I think pretty much all of it is driven by either voice prompts or sounds to know what you're doing.
That's right. We as much as possible, like you say, there are several, well, there's so many features that not everything is accessible by it. But I know that the teams in Tokyo are considering and working out how we can bring different elements to touch and voice control as well to make it that much easier. But yeah, that's certainly the case.
You mentioned the packaging being accessible as well. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what's gone into that to make that accessible?
Yeah, absolutely. So the packaging is, it's easy to access, first of all. So, of course, we don't have any plastic in the packaging anymore, which is something that makes a big difference also in terms of not just sustainability, but also access. And it's very easy to open. Once you are inside the case, one of the first things you're presented with is a QR code sheet, which is attached to it. Now, it's on a piece of cardboard, and what's nice is there is a frame around the QR code, a raised frame in the cardboard. So it's very easy to identify where the QR code is, as well as a little notch on the side of the card to sort of direct you towards it. So it's really trying to guide you towards that. That QR code then takes you to being able to download the support app, which is, as I mentioned earlier on, that's the Sony Sound Connect app. It will direct you towards that. And of course, once you've got that installed on your phone, the app itself supports various screen readers, and you're able to really get going with setting up the product itself.
Just before we sort of wrap this conversation up, do you want to give us a little bit on availability and pricing of these?
Yeah, absolutely. So these range are available now. So there are launched actually back in August, I believe, last year. But it's very much the top of our range. And at the moment, it's retails around about £330.
Okay. And just to give that model name again, these are the WH-1000XM6.
That's right. Yeah, the 1000 WH-1000X Mark 6. Not the most catchy name in the world, but it's certainly our most famous one at the moment, the 1000X range. And yes, the Mark 6, WH-1000X Mark 6 is the latest model.
Yeah, fantastic. And some great work gone into them. And the other products as well. We will be hearing more from you over the next couple of weeks. But for now, Mike Somerset, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we are here to talk about a major legislative milestone in terms of audio description and video services. To tell us a little bit more about this, I'm joined by Sonali Rai, Senior Manager from RNIB's Media, Culture and Immersive Technologies team. Sonali, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. Pleasure to be here.
So can you give us a bit of a summary as to the legislative milestone that has been reached?
So what we have are now legal requirements for video on demand services to provide audio description. And we welcome the introduction of these, you know, of these legal requirements for audio description on video on demand services. So this is obviously long awaited, and it's an important step because on demand viewing is now almost a norm for many of us, including blind and partially sighted audiences. So what it requires is that a minimum of 10% of the catalog or of the content will need to have audio description. Now, we realize that, you know, 10% is the minimum threshold. There's obviously further progress to be made But what we needed was a minimum threshold to have a consistent service across all the different video on demand services. What we also need is a regulated accessibility code, which will bring in the much needed consistency that I'm talking about services. So we are definitely looking forward to continuing our work with the industry, with Ofcom, with the government, to ensure that more content is audio described and that platforms are accessible, because it's not just about audio description, but we also need people to be able to navigate the platforms independently.
Now, we've mentioned, you know, this was quite a long awaited step and quite an important one too. Can you give us a bit of a snapshot as to how long the RNIB has been campaigning for this specific shift in, you know, video on demand regulation?
There's a funny story behind this. The day we got the news about this legislation, I went back to my inbox and started going through my emails. So apparently the first email that was sent about the requirement or for the need for such a requirement was back in 2015. So we are in 2026, so it's only taken about 11 years to actually get the legal requirements. I think it does take a while because you have to bring the industry together, understand what their requirements are, speak to end users, because end users, I know we say end users, but because, you know, for us, we're talking about blind and partially sighted people. But when Ofcom and the government are looking at end users, they're looking at people with sight loss, they're looking at people with hearing loss, and to actually just come together to understand, okay, what are the real user requirements of this user group all put together. I think that's quite a complex task. And we it's great to hear that finally we have some user requirements, or we will have some user requirements in the accessibility code. What we now have is a 10% minimum threshold. I know a lot of people are very disappointed with the 10%, as it does sound low, and I agree it's very low. What Ofcom seems to have done is, or what the government seems to have done is, they have picked up what we had for linear services in the Communications Act. So the Communications Act of 2003 requires all broadcasters or all channels that reach a minimum of 0.5% of the population, viewing population, to add audio description to a minimum of 10% of their content. So what we have is almost a mirror of the same requirement for video on demand services this time. So all streamers, all services that reach about 500,000 viewers in a month will have to comply with this requirement of 10%. Now, if you start looking at the Ofcom Access Services report, so they publish a report almost every 6 months. I was looking through the report for the last Ofcom report from Jan to, I think it was June 2025. That's the last report that Ofcom published. Channel 4 had about 31% of content on their video on demand service with audio description. ITV had about, I think, 24 to 25%. I might be wrong. I think it might be 23% or something. So we're already seeing, the point I'm trying to make is, we're already seeing that 10% is the minimum threshold, and it's being treated as the minimum threshold. People are building on that. The problem now is consistency. We want all video on demand services, at least all the major ones, to have at least some audio described content, and then we can start building on it.
And that's going to have a huge impact for, you know, 2 million plus people in the UK living with sight loss. Can you give us a kind of a brief summary of, you know, just how important and what sort of an impact it will have on blind and partially sighted people who, you know, use these services on a very regular basis?
So for us, you know, I just talked about when was the first time we actually started talking about the need for regulation. I should also add that in the past 10 years, the reason we've worked and focused so much on video on demand services and, you know, absolutely made sure that the industry, the government, Ofcom are aware of this requirement is because that has been the leading complaint to our team from blind and partially sighted people. So it has been about one or the other video on demand service not delivering audio description, or a new streaming service being launched in the UK without audio description, or description being available on a service, but the service not actually being accessible. So the platform is not accessible, the app is not accessible. So even if there is audio description, people can't find it, you can't navigate it, and you can't always ask your family and friends, or you know, if you have a carer, to navigate for you. You want to do that yourself. So this is what this legislation and this requirement, you know, the accessibility code that we are waiting for, that is what that will bring to this service. So the impact we expect is to be huge.
I want to dive into a technical aspect, something that I've been talking about with many people in the last few years, and this is AI versus human performance. You know, in the rise of AI generated synthetic voices, there has been a push to use them for audio description as well, to save costs. But what is RNIB's stance on, you know, AI versus professional human narrators?
I think it's a tricky one. I think what we are trying to do is we're looking at quality. We're not looking at synthetic voices, human voices anymore. So I think in 2024, it was, we finished our a synthetic speech study that we did to evaluate the quality of synthetic voices for audio description specifically. And when we published a survey, we didn't actually say which voices were synthetic, which were human voices. And from the results, we can see that a lot of people were not able to tell which voices were synthetic. They were not able to identify the synthetic ones from the human ones. So that was an interesting result from us. And for us, given that result, we're now looking at quality of audio description rather than whether people are using, you know, providers are using synthetic voices or human voices. Because voices are getting better, and they will get better, even better with time. So as long as they're able to give us the same clarity, the same comprehension, the same emotional tone that we need for audio description, so that it feels as if it's part of the program, I think that's fine. But again, the focus needs to remain on quality of audio description. And if the quality isn't good, we ask people, please come through and tell us, because we do hear from people quite often when they watch something, they don't like it. They'll just drop us a line and say, you know, I watched this last night on this so-and-so, didn't work. And they give us a few reasons, okay, why it didn't work. And what we do is we just take that email, content from that email, and we pass it on to the streamer or to the broadcaster. So we want to tell people, we want to tell the industry if something is not working. So if your listeners actually come across a piece of content, they think it's being voiced by synthetic, the voice is not good enough, there's no intonation, and it's just not working with the program, we welcome those comments. Please come through and tell us so that we know and we can actually tell the broadcaster or the streamer about it.
When it comes to streaming services, you know, you've mentioned some of them. You've mentioned Channel 4, you've mentioned ITV, and you mentioned how a lot of them have more than that 10% minimum audio described content. But, you know, which other services when it comes to video on demand content are leading the way in terms of audio description, and which ones, you know, maybe may not be so?
So a lot of people love the audio description on Netflix. There's a lot of it, we hear, and people just love the voices and how it just works with the program. Another service that we hear a lot about is Disney. So at the Media Accessibility Symposium, a lot of people were talking about, you know, the Star Wars franchises, a lot of content there with audio description and good quality audio description. Prime Video, we know there's a lot of synthetic voices being used for audio description. We've had some really good comments, but if people have any comments about the synthetic speech, please just let us know. But there are a number of titles on Prime Video with audio description. So what Prime Video also has is voice enhancement, I think, which is great. Makes your dialogues clearer, makes it easier to actually watch a film, especially if it's a very noisy film. I know I switch it on all the time. Have you tried it, Hubert? Do you think it's useful?
Yes, especially when you've got, like you've mentioned, like noisy films. When you watch like an action movie and there's a lot of explosions going on and things like that, loud noises, and there's dialogue going on, and how are you supposed to hear it? And I think that, to me, it can be a difference maker sometimes, because there's something you could easily miss in a noisy scene if the voices aren't clear enough. So I think that, to me, is quite an important feature. It may be small in some cases, but it does make a difference, I think.
Absolutely. I think I absolutely love the feature. And I know Prime Video is working a lot on their, on the quality. They're focusing a lot on the quality of their content, of audio description. So I think these are doing quite well. We're quite disappointed with Discovery. There is very little audio description there, or none at all. And Sky has recently started putting audio description on their titles, and we have been advised that there will be the number of titles with audio description will be growing. So there seems to be good news all around, but what we need is stickiness. You know, when content moves from one platform to another, or one service to another, can it just travel with audio description? That's what we keep repeating to the industry. You know, say, for example, if you're watching content A on one service and then tomorrow you log on to another service, again, you've got content A, but without audio description this time. So it is tremendously confusing for people. It's very fragmented. It's still very patchy. And that's the reason we need this Media Act.
Now, the headline of the news stories I've read regarding this legislation is, you know, it mentions 18 million people benefiting, in those, including those with hearing loss and other disabilities. So how has the RNAB been collaborating with other organisations to ensure a, you know, to call it unified front for accessible media?
So we have worked a lot with RNID over on Media Act, because again, RNID campaigns for subtitles and sign language. We campaign for audio description. So it all comes together as access features. It has been a wonderful experience working with the RNID team. And I think you're right. It is all about a unified front, you know, presenting the user requirements of blind and partially sighted people. And we also hear from a lot of community groups coming through to us, sending us, when we're completing our consultations, they'll send us their comments that we include in our response. We always encourage everyone to fill in their own responses, you know, go back with what your members tell you. But equally, if they want asked to include their comments, that's what we can do as well. So I think it has definitely been almost a joint operation right from the beginning.
This is a huge step for, you know, blind and partially sighted people in the UK. But I wonder, do you think this will have a more global reach in terms of availability of audio description on streaming services in other countries? Because, you know, otherwise streaming services would have to have different versions for different countries when it comes to content. But do you think this could encourage a more global change?
I imagine it will. I can't imagine that it'll only be done for the UK, because when services, you know, what Media Act will do is it'll draw attention to the requirements of the Media Act. So building in audio description, building in sign language, building in caption subtitles. I mean, most services do support subtitles and captions, but sign language, audio description are sort of services that you need to pay attention to right at the beginning when you're designing your platform, when you're designing your app and your service. So yes, this will require streamers, global streamers, to pay attention to this development. And I can't imagine they would want to restrict it to just the UK market, because once a service is embedded within the service, why wouldn't you want to, you know, share it with viewers across countries? So I think this will definitely have an impact across different countries and not just the UK.
And to finish off, you know, we've reached this legislative milestone. It's a fantastic step forward, and it is definitely a step forward. And, you know, there's still much more to be done. So what is the next frontier for the RNAB in the realm of media and technology?
So essentially our roadmap, I'm going to split this into two. First part is moving audio description from distribution to production. So at the moment in the UK, or across the world, audio description is produced at the point of distribution. So it is a network, it is a channel that produces audio description and then puts it out on their network. However, what we're looking at is if it could be moved from distribution, that point, to production. So part of the production team and done as part of post-production. Would that help? There are quite a few reasons. One, there are a lot of programs that don't need audio description. They just have simple graphics within them that just need voiceover. at the moment, the problem here is the production teams don't understand accessibility, and those graphics are quite often not voiced. So if you were to move accessibility into production, they would have a better understanding of accessibility, what the requirements are, adding voiceover where it can help, and then producing the audio description as part of the production budget, which is obviously a bigger entity. The second thing on the other side, what we want to start doing is fixing platforms and device barriers. So often at the moment, what we hear is the pain points don't sit in content. So there is a lot of content, but there's a lot of problems with menus, setting profiles, inconsistent design, and those problems need to be solved. We need shared standards. AI will help at some point, and they may help with hybrid workflows, but human oversight, ethics, and clear labeling will definitely be required. And also what we need is making AD and accessibility files travel with the content. So when programs move between services, accessibility elements are, they're too often lost. So can we make sure that the accessibility elements, so audio description, sign language, for example, can they just travel with the program? And the last thing on our list is definitely co-creating with blind and partially sighted people. So quality and usability, it'll improve if we have structured and continuous, shared environments. We have focus groups, we have interviews. There are a few broadcasters who are doing it already, but we want this to be part of a structured approach in future.
It sounds really exciting. And I think, we've moved that step forward, and there's so much more to be improved. And it'll be interesting to follow these sorts of developments, starting with milestones like we've just talked about here. So thank you very much, Sonali Rai, Senior Manager at RNIB's Media, Culture and Immersive Technologies team, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
We've had an email come in from Andrew, who's got a little tip for us about the Meta glasses. He says, "Hi team, I was listening to episode 603, where you described a problem with the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. When asking a subsequent question about what the glasses can see, it helps if you add the word look and tell me what you see, rather than just asking what it can see. The word look always forces the glasses to take a new picture." I've tried this. I've had mixed results with this, because I've heard this before as well, how look... To be fair, 99% of the time it works. But I have had occasions where it will do the noise like it's taking a picture, but then still repeat itself, which is a bit odd. I don't know if either of you two have tried this.
Yeah, I'll try anything if I can, just to get what I need from it. So look, tell, show, all those kind of words, I've tried them all, really, and it is hit or miss. Sometimes it can hit the nail straight on the head. Other times you have to fiddle about a little bit and, alter your vocabulary slightly. But I find in the main it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, a command that I use all the time, and I've said this before, is like, what product is this? If I'm getting something out of the fridge or the freezer, or I'm putting the shopping away, I will ask it what a certain product is, and that is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's so good for that.
It's "what am I holding" for me. I use that command on a very regular basis, although I've even done it more specifically where I was running around the house looking for some batteries a few days ago. I just kind of pointed my glasses at the box and went, "tell me what brand of batteries this is," and it took a picture and it did it without even mentioning the word look. So it varies, but sometimes I do use it if the glasses aren't kind of reacting the way I want them to. I will push for the word look, and it will take a picture. So I had a lot of results where that wasn't required, but sometimes I do use that particular phrase just to make sure it does what I want it to.
I wish I'd have thought of that. I was hunting for some batteries the other day because my James, my son, he's a year old, and he was playing, and then one of his toys, the batteries died. And I'm hunting through for some triple A's. Got loads of double A's, huge packs of double A's, but couldn't find any triple A's anywhere. And if you've got kids, you'll know what it's like when they're playing with a toy and it stops working. You need to get on that pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. That's a good tip, actually. I should have thought of that. But what I found is the initial command of like, what product is this or what am I holding? That works fine, but it's then after that when you try asking. It'll just get stuck in a loop of what it saw the first time. But yeah, that does sometimes work. It is a good tip, is that? So yeah, cheers, Andrew. Hopefully that helps anyone else who finds themselves in that situation. And yeah, I will bear that in mind because I do keep forgetting about that one. And if you want to get in touch with us, if you've got anything like this that you want to share, or if you're having a bit of a tech problem that we might be able to help you out with, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need.
For many blind people like myself, audio description is a must, whether it's on TV, cinema, theatres, arts venues. It's appearing in more and more places. Now, when it comes to TV, well, think of all the channels, terrestrial, streaming channels. How do you find what's audio described? Well, there could be some light on the horizon. Jez Watts is with us. Thanks for joining us, Jez.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So audio description, I'm not sure, do you use that yourself? I find it something really vital for TV.
It's something that I don't need to use it, but I have it on in the background quite often just to keep up with how it's sounding, which programmes are using it. And as we've said on many occasions, it can be quite useful if you're doing your ironing or something.
Do you know, my wife is sighted, but she goes into the kitchen and she's like, going to put the audio description on so I can know what's happening on the TV.
Yeah, definitely. It's got many uses.
And for many people who don't know about AD, it's a narrative that goes in between this sort of dialogue of the characters on the telly and basically describes kind of what's going on visually, what's happening on the screen as well. And, you know, the good news, Jez, is I suppose there are more and more TV channels using AD. We'd love more, but there are more and more now.
Definitely. I mean, we're noticing all the time that smaller platforms are doing it. Companies are springing up all over the place requesting this AD. So it's moving from something that people have to do to something that people want to do, and that's fantastic for everybody. And as you say, there can always be more, but there's definitely growth. But yeah, we're always after more all the time.
There's terrestrial channels there, there's streaming platforms now, there's on-demand TV to watch too. There's so much, you know, for everybody to do. And I suppose keeping track of what programmes are already described must be getting harder and harder to do. There's so much now.
Well, this is it, and there's a lot of, obviously, historical AD as well. So programmes that aren't necessarily advertised, looking back, people have done quite a lot of their back catalogues. And yeah, new programmes. So we've kind of created a TV listings on this site that you can filter to show just programmes with AD. We've been obviously playing around with it. And what's quite interesting is which channels have many, many programmes and which channels that comes up with nothing. So that's quite an eye-opener as well, and it's probably a good way of helping people discover which channels are more AD-friendly than others, you know.
Is it kind of early days for this particular part, the audio description scheduling?
Yeah, it's very early. So the broadcasters, the platforms, they're all being really helpful. They're supportive and they're really keen, obviously, to get up there as well. But there are hoops to jump through, and what we're finding is what was best was just to get what we've got up there. So we've got the main channels like BBC and ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5 should be next. We've got Amazon Prime up there. Netflix and Apple should be coming. But the idea is that really once we get momentum, more will come more quickly once they see that it's being used. It's quite a complex process, which surprised me, I have to say.
Where did the idea come from to actually look at audio description and include that on the website?
Well, the whole thing came from the RNIB symposium, actually, back in September, which you hosted.
That was me.
In case you forgot. and what we found, what the idea was born, that what we need is like an area where people who use AD can congregate and provide feedback and ask questions. And that there are often simple frustrations which are easily resolved and answered, but there's a lot of people doing a lot of different things. So we thought if we could create one platform where everyone can go, that would be really helpful for people who use AD and people who create it. You know, we want feedback. It's going to create a bit of accountability as well. And so we decided to build this platform, and we sent out a few questions to a test group. and said, you know, what would you like to see as well? What things are important? And TV listings came up actually as quite a high priority. It's something I would not have thought of, but it was, yeah, a lot of people requested it, and especially this AD filter.
So you're hosting this on the website, you're building it as well. Obviously, you've got some of the big hitters on there. And I suppose the goal is that other channels see that this is being promoted. Because at the end of the day, if people, even people like myself who use audio description, we're watching channels that are perhaps commercial channels or that are pay-per-view channels as well. So when it comes down to the sort of pounds and pennies, you know, channels may want to be on here to increase their viewers.
That's it, 100%. I mean, it's in their interest to get on there. So that's why we, exactly that, we thought if we launch, we get people seeing that there are channels already up, you know, advertising their programs. Within the website, there's a place for broadcasters to sign up as well. So it's for them as well to be able to say, this new program's got AD, you know, don't miss this new drama. Or we've just done a whole load of, you know, B-movie back catalogues, or we're going to be audio describing this program live. So it is in everyone's benefit to get up there and join in, really. And that's the thing about it. The more people that use it, the more it will grow exponentially.
We'll get the details on the website in just a moment, Jez. But say I log on to your webpage, I get onto the landing page. What am I kind of greeted with, and how would I find audio described programs?
So the first thing you do is obviously register, which is a really simple process. We've made it as accessible. Again, we're open to feedback. So if anyone finds something's not working or something could be better, just drop us a line and we'll have a look at it. But as soon as you open it up, you've got an option to open a TV guide or a streaming guide. And then it shows you how popular it is. That's at the top of the page. And then you just scroll down a little bit, and we've basically got threads that we've created, some sort of practice ones where people can start a conversation. So it's just like a forum. It's like Reddit or Facebook or anything that people might have used before, where you can just say, did anyone see this program last night? I thought the AD was brilliant. Or why did it drop out? Or why was it so bad? Or whichever. We can just create conversations and everyone can jump in and offer feedback and answer. But yeah, that's what you get. Basically, TV listings at the top and then threads under it.
Okay, so if people would like to check this out, they'd like to register, if they'd like to use the service, and indeed feedback, because, you know, at the end of the day, we'd all like all the broadcasters to sign up to this. How easy is it to do it? What do they have to do?
Go to the website. It will ask you to log on. You give a username, come up with a password. The main thing to look out for is that because it's a new site, some firewalls are a bit suspicious of it. So you might want to check your junk folders. It will send you a email to verify your email address. So if that doesn't ping up in your inbox, just check your junk folder or your spam folder, click on that, and then you're in. And there's a small section to fill in about whether you're an AD user or creator or broadcaster, maybe gender if you want, an age range, just so that we can get some ideas of who's using it. And that's it, it's done. So it is insideaccess.live, insideaccess all one word, .live.
Easy as that.
Easy as that.
Well, Jez, let's hope lots of people do sign up to this. It sounds great. And to get more of the broadcast on there can only be a good thing as well. And thanks for telling us all about it on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Lovely to chat with you.
And that is it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. If you've got any comments or questions or feedback that you want to give us, let us know. You're always welcome to get in touch with us. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that email address. Voice notes or written messages, always welcome. We'll be back with you next week, but from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.